An anonymous group is asking the Iron River Library to remove nearly 500 LGBTQ+ related materials from the public library and calling for the resignation of library board members. The town is located in Bayfield County in northern Wisconsin and has just 1,000 residents. The request came in the form of a letter from, quote, concerned citizens. We were scheduled to speak with the director of the Iron River Library about this attempted book banning, but the president of the library board canceled our interview at the last minute. The president of the board told me over the phone they're trying to gather more facts about who is behind the letter, but the library director says they are not pulling the books. This follows a trend of conservative groups around the country attempting to remove books related to LGBTQ issues. Joining us now is Louise Robbins, a UW-Madison professor emeritus of Library Information Sciences and Studies. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So are there any parallels in history to this current movement to ban books, especially related to marginalized groups?
Absolutely. It's been going on for a long time. I think some of the most prominent examples are during the McCarthy period. During the 50s, there was a large group of attempts to censor books related to communists, but also to people of color. There were, and as it went along, let me back up there a minute. They wanted to ban cheap paperbacks and comic books. One person testifying before a congressional committee said comic books would blow your boys' brains out. So they were rather alarmist about the effect of such things. But the targets were people of color, Jewish people, and non-binary people then too. And then in 1958, for example, a book called The Rabbit's Wedding, a children's book with a black bunny and a white bunny, nearly caused the firing of the state librarian of Alabama, Emily Reed, because the state said it promoted interracial marriage. There was a group in the 90s called Family Friendly Libraries who attacked pretty much the same topics. Like today's Moms for Liberty.
Yeah,
on and on.
This seems to happen pretty regularly. What kind of impact can a request like this have on a small community?
Well, in my experience, it can drive away people who don't agree with the protesters. And that means that in a community, a small community, they might have a significant brain drain. It would split up the community so that people who historically have worked well together now don't. So it can have a big impact. In the group that I studied in Oklahoma in the 50s, a large number of researchers with Phillips Petroleum fled the city and went elsewhere because they didn't want their children to grow up in such a place. The same kind of thing could happen here, though not on that kind of scale, of course.
That's right. So the books in question have to do with gender and sexuality. How do libraries assess what books on these topics go where in the interest of, you know, all families and children to make sure that they're available, but they're not right out in the front if they're not appropriate?
Well, there are several things they do. They consult reviews. They look at which are award-winning books. They have a committee often that decides on what they're going to include, what they're not. The number that the Concerned Citizens cite is a number that's held in all the Northern Waters Library Service libraries, apparently, and also on state e-book collections. So it's not anything if one library had 450 titles like that, it would be very lopsided. So what they try to do is provide for the reading interests of a wide variety of people and be sure they have things on various sides of an issue through consulting reviewers, quality lists, and so on. Just the same way you would try to select a product for your home, you consult those reviews.
So if there are parents or individuals that have concerns about some books in a library, what is the appropriate way to do it, to talk to a librarian about that?
Well, there is such a thing as a reconsideration form, usually, and most libraries are processed. And I do believe all of the libraries in the Northern Waters area have such a process. But you have to have read the book, And then you have to identify the specific areas that are problematic, so that you don't just go in with a list of 150 books and say all of these are bad. You have to know what you're talking about and make a logical complaint. There are a lot of ways to do that, and sometimes they result in a change in location for the shelving for the book, but generally speaking, not removal unless the book is clearly out of beyond the margins.
So we've got about a minute left. In your experience, has book banning ever worked? Are there examples of books that small groups have targeted and have actually removed from the public discourse?
I don't believe they've ever been able to remove them completely. I only know of one book in the history of the United States that's had the plates broken, and that was in the 40s or 50s, and it has since been reissued. I don't know of others. Sometimes, however, an author can be hurt by having someone prejudge their books before they ever get out there, which means that their sales drop and then they don't have much opportunity to publish again. And it's most important for voices that aren't most frequently heard, because they really don't have, until recently, there haven't been that many books published by minority voices. And now there are the opportunity to hear from a lot of people. And libraries are supposed to provide choices and be in a place where ideas can duel it out, not people, but where ideas can challenge one another through your reading. It's a matter of choice, not of indoctrination.
All right. We'll leave it there. Louise Robbins, UW-Madison Professor Emeritus, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.